Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Listeners, on this podcast, we usually bring you national politics and national issue conversations of the day, right? But we had a conversation last week on my local New York show about reopening some of New York City's indoor spaces, like sports and concert arenas, comedy clubs, and music venues. So on this weekend special, you'll hear me talking to the owners of three venues in New York, but the issues they're grappling with, capacity limits, vaccine passports, contact tracing, venues around the country will have to consider those same questions if they're not already wherever you live. So even though this is more of a local conversation, it's really local everywhere. So here is that conversation on reopening safely for music, theater, and sports. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics podcast from WNYC Studios. This is a weekend special. Now we'll talk to the leaders of three indoor entertainment venues of different types that are trying to bring music, comedy, and spectator sports back to New York and to do it safely now that the state reopening rules allow them to try. We are delighted that they accepted our invitation to compare notes and take some phone calls. With us now are Michael Dorf, founder and CEO of City Winery on West 16th Street near the Hudson River in Manhattan and at Rockefeller Center. They just started presenting live music again, including Patti Smith and others. Julie Kim, co-owner of Littlefield, an arts and performance space at 635 Sackett Street in Gowanus, Brooklyn. They present various things in normal times. Tomorrow they're having what they call Nerd Night. Next Thursday, a women's comedy show called She Makes Me Laugh. Next Saturday, an event called Shrek, Entirely from Memory. And John Abamandi, CEO of BSE Global, which owns the Barclays Center and the Brooklyn Nets. It is a good year to be able to say you help run the Brooklyn Nets. Even last night's loss was exciting for the way the bench players staged a big comeback. I can say welcome to Michael Dorf. Welcome to Julie Kim. Welcome to John Abamandi to WNYC. Thank you all so much for coming on with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Michael, Patti Smith, huh? Before we even get to our COVID questions, what was that like emotionally for her and for the crowd?
Well, it was fantastically powerful. We've done now 12 nights in a row of live entertainment. Patti was two of them. They've all been consistently emotional. The artist on stage feels it, talks about it. The audience certainly feels it. They're very enthusiastic about being in this space. I have to remind everyone at the top of the show that they shouldn't get used to all the spacing in our room, that it's temporary and we're going to crowd them in eventually, I hope. They're very special evenings. And of course, Patti being such a critical genius and an icon of New York, was great to have her on our stage.
Julie, Nerd Night. What's that going to be tomorrow night?
Well, we typically have our host there in person, but tomorrow we're going to do a hybrid Zoom virtual and live in-person show. So our host will be zooming in from California, since he's not here yet, and the rest of the folks will be doing their presentations in person. So we'll have a guest host for the second part of the show. It's kind of a semi-return to normalcy, as best we can do it, given the situation.
People are supposed to prove their nerd status, or what's the theme?
So the first half of the show will be trivia. We have Matt, who hosts trivia for Nerd Night, actually do it every Tuesdays at my other spot, Park Life, which is a restaurant. But he will be returning to do a full Nerd Night trivia for this Friday. And following that will be presentations that are all nerd-related. They'll talk mm-hmm. about history of crossword puzzles, female executives on TV screen, and we'll learn about Brasilia. So We're very excited to have those folks entertain us, yeah, and educate us.
And John, whether or not the Nets go all the way this year, it is so much fun to be a Nets fan this year. What's it like to be CEO of the parent company during this particular season?
Well, Brian, thanks for having us on. I would say this is a really exciting season for our fans, and we've been doing our best during the pandemic to engage with our fans. We are grateful that the state reopened our facility and facilities like it back in late February. We've been operating at 10% capacity, and the crowds have been enthusiastic and safe, and we're just glad people are getting to witness a pretty exciting basketball team.
I want to go around the room and ask what you're requiring of customers when they come in. As I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, any of you, Barclays Center requires proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID test. City Winery and Littlefield, you're just doing a health questionnaire and a temperature check. No vaccine or test requirements, but I see Littlefield collects contact tracing information. And I also read that City Winery is considering a vaccination requirement that would begin next month. So let's unpack this. And John, I'll stay with you first for Barclays Center. How's the negative test or vaccine proof policy working out? And are you having to turn anyone away at the door who's bought a ticket to a Nets game when they show up without either?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Brian. So the policies that we're operating under are actually set by the state of New York and the Department of Health. And so under those policies, fans have to present either proof of vaccination or have a negative COVID test. And we're providing those tests at no additional cost to the fans that need them. Of course, we've had fans test positive. I'd be worried, frankly, if we hadn't. It would mean we weren't looking very hard. And we've had to let people know and direct them to medical personnel and of course we would refund anyone's ticket that unfortunately is in that situation. I would say though that the positivity rate is falling dramatically over the last couple months. It's around 3% right now statewide, and our fans are testing positive at a much lower rate than that. And so we've been pleased at our ability to keep everyone safe.
Michael Dorf from City Winery, let me ask you what you're doing so far in terms of requirements for customers and what you're considering.
Well, right now we're doing what the state mandates for 100 people legally, which is simply the normal indoor dining protocols, mask wearing, spacing out, doing the survey on entry, taking temperature. We are working with Clear, and we have kiosk set up at our entrance that are handling that in a frictionless way, and we're getting all of our customers to take the Clear app and start utilizing it and get more comfortable with it. Starting May 1st, we will accept only vaccine certificates, which can come with the paper certificate. You can upload it through Clear or use the Excelsior Pass that the state of New York is the only one using. The Excelsior Pass is really perfectly set up for this. So we are going to go to a vaccine-only policy starting May 1st. We did a survey of our customers as soon as we went on sale with tickets on April 2nd, and 93% of our customers already had one shot in the arm by the time we did the survey, and will be vaccinated by the time they attended a show. So we felt very comfortable. Again, and that survey was the first week of April, that a majority of our customers have made the decision they're going to go out and wine and dine and see mm-hmm. entertainment once they're inoculated.
So we feel very good about vaccine only, requiring a digital upload. Why not also PCR test or rapid test of the door at the door like they're doing at Barclays Center?
Yeah, no, we will allow for someone who is vaccine hesitant or for whatever reason they don't want to get a vaccine to show proof of a negative test.
So oh, you it's will.
72 hours for a PCR or 8 hours for a rapid antigen test. We did testing when we were doing just indoor dining in November, and we found it a bit cumbersome to have the practitioners who are certified on site doing it, very expensive. Now prices have come down, but since we're really seeing such a high percentage of our customers having been vaccinated, it would only be a few anomalous customers who might go for the test. And so we're asking them to show proof on their own rather than do it on site.
Julie, all three of you have very detailed safety protocol pages. I see. I'm looking at the Littlefield one. It describes keeping customers 6 feet apart in the line outside, the temperature check and questionnaire and contact tracing information at the door. Food and drink ordering inside is via mobile app, not directly to a server or bartender. You're requiring your staff to be fully vaccinated. The performers are at least 12 feet from the nearest audience member. And at the end of the show, there is an orderly process, you say, for having people exit one row at a time. We could spend our whole segment just discussing that list. But let me ask you about a couple of those pieces. You're collecting contact tracing information. Why aren't you requiring the negative test or vaccination for patrons like Barclays and now City Winery are doing? How did you decide on your admission requirements? And on asking for contact tracing information, is anyone objecting to that as an invasion of privacy?
Sure. So same as Michael and City Winery, we're doing 100 people or less. So that doesn't require any testing, but we want to keep our staff and the rest of the patrons safe. So what we've done is following the state and city guidelines, you know, filling out the health declaration, getting their temperature checks. You know, that's important to us and really reinforcing mask wearing. And to further protect us, you know, I did change the system of ordering. So they have to use the third-party app at their seats, and then we get all the tickets, kind of like a service bar, and we have runners to bring out their food and drinks. And one of the requirements that has been a sticking point for us is that the state is requiring that the food be purchased with their first alcoholic beverage. And instead of disrupting the show and letting patrons know, hey, your first order didn't include food, you need to order something else, we decided to upcharge all of our tickets to include food. So the $5 upcharge includes walk and chips to go.
And whether or not they eat it. Why not require the vaccination or negative COVID test proof? Is it too cumbersome for a small space?
I mean, for us,
why
it
not
is.
If that's the safer option?
There's issues. Well, you know, in terms of vaccination, not everyone can be vaccinated for, you know, health or for religious reasons. You know, we've always, our philosophy has always been to be as inclusive as possible. And, you know, if I know that if I couldn't attend a show, I love going to live shows. If I couldn't attend because of my health, and that would prevent me from going, I don't know. I just don't want to exclude people, but so there has to be alternatives to maintain safety. I feel like, you know, we're doing the best we can given the situation and the guidelines to give people, everyone, a chance to come if they feel comfortable.
And so, if someone gets on the contact tracing, if someone gets COVID within 2 weeks after attending a show, are they supposed to contact the club and you would then contact all the other patrons who are at that show, or how would that work?
Yes, so the contact tracing, we have their email, their phone number. We also keep track of where they were sitting once they check in. So we need that information to be accurate, and we know that sometimes people are not upfront with their personal information. But we hope that, you know, this is for the public, for the general public safety. We hope that they are honest, and then we would reach out to everybody and let them know. We would all get tested. Our staff who had worked that night would get tested. And we would want all the patrons, as well as the performers, to get tested as well. And
have you had to do it yet?
No, not yet. But we also just opened in 40
the other day. Michael, do you have that contact tracing at City Winery also?
We do. I'd love to comment on this on a few aspects, but we were open in November, December in a few of our locations, New York and elsewhere. And we had, unfortunately, several positive cases come in. We had to reach out to all the people who were in the restaurant at that point. And thank goodness we had detailed contact information for everybody to let them know, you know, that we had somebody positive and to take precautions. And that's what we have to do. In general, I feel a little differently than Julie. You know, I feel our and even though we probably feel the same, but we're taking a little more draconian approach right now, is that our job is to make people as safe as possible. We need to have fire suppression systems and working exit signs and good means of egress. And all of these things are about the not just physical safety, but even some of the psychological comfort of hosting and being a hospitality player. And so we want to make people as safe as possible. It's why we don't allow people to carry guns into our and not to bring up another issue, but we don't allow that. It's why people got yellow fever vaccines if they wanted to go to, on a safari. It's an important thing is to emphasize this is temporary. This is in a transition till we can get rid of this, you know, this virus and be out of the pandemic. Let's hope we're only doing this for 6, 8, 10 months and not forever as a permanent policy, because there are privacy concerns. But this is what we got to do right now to make our customers, artists, and staff safe.
Let's take a phone call. Kip in New Brunswick has a question for John Abamandi from Barclays Center. Hi, Kip. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. So my question is, we've recently seen in Texas and Florida, you know, obviously they're both, for all intents and purposes, very open. Florida specifically has announced that their arenas and sheds are going to be going to 75% capacity soon. We recently saw a baseball game with the Rangers in Dallas at full capacity. And my question is, how is that influencing your decisions versus Barclays Center going forward? Because, you know, obviously we have two good, shall we say, guinea pig states out there right now.
Kip, thanks for the question. It's a great question. Listen, the short answer is that we're beholden to the state. We're not setting the policies. We're following them. And the policy here in New York State for the last couple of months has been 10% capacity. Now, I'll take the opportunity to opine. I think that capacity can safely be raised. I think I've spoken to people at the Department of Health who agree the wheels of bureaucracy turn slowly. The situation here in New York, while still very serious, has improved dramatically over the last couple of months. You know, we're now at a point where 40% of the state has received at least one shot. Another 10% have had COVID, right? So 50% of our population in New York have at least some degree of immunity, and one in four New Yorkers is fully vaccinated. So we're at 10% with testing and vaccine required. New Jersey and Philadelphia are at 20% with no testing and no vaccine required. California is at 35%. So it's not just the red states. And we believe it's time now to increase the capacity restrictions. We think we've proven that we can safely return fans with these controls in place. We have a 670,000 square foot building. So having 1,600 people in the building is extraordinarily conservative, and we think and we hope the state will soon agree that it's time to increase the limit.
John Abamandi, CEO of BSE Global, which owns Barclays Center and the Brooklyn Nets. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Continued good luck with the Nets this season, and continued good luck with reopening Barclays.
Thank you, Brian, and good luck to everyone.
And just a few minutes left with Michael Dorff from City Winery and Julie Kim from Littlefield, the performance and art space at 635 Sackett Street in Gowanus. Julie, I understand you're having comedy and other spoken word, but not yet music, from what I can see. Do you think people feel safer coming in for comedy than for music so far? Is that also a business decision?
Yes. So we, and it's interesting. It's a dual-edged sword there because, you know, we were not allowed to have comedy at all previous to reopening. With my other space, we were doing socially distant outdoor comedy shows because we felt it was, you know, at the time the science told us, okay, every COVID travels via the aerosol. So we thought, well, you don't want singers. It's easier to have comedians at least wear masks. You know, they don't need to blow into like wind instruments. But then the state said, no, we're banning comedy altogether. And so then when we opened, we thought, okay, let's reach out to bands then. And then it became tricky with artists, musicians who didn't feel comfortable yet being on stage. Or it was an issue of finance, you know. We operate, even though the state is allowing us to operate at 33% capacity or 100 people, we are currently operating at 16%. So my room holds 300 people. I can only have 50 people due to social distancing. I don't have the finance to create barriers in between people, which would increase my capacity to 100. It's just a huge economic burden on us. And also the numbers don't work out for musicians. You know, they take a percentage for us, if they take a majority of the percentage of the tickets sold, but we don't have the capacity to meet their bottom line.
Yeah.
So in the end, we decided, you know, okay, well, we missed comedy, so we're going to bring it back, start that way, and we'll slowly reintroduce music. I mean, the space is meant to host a variety of things. You know, we don't just do comedy and live music. We also host dance parties, you know, when we don't know when that's going to happen, and it's probably not going to happen until everyone is vaccinated. But, you know, the option we're giving all of our patrons, as well as our performers, is that we are doing a live stream. So, you know, for those fans who test positive and they can't go see any shows for a while, there is a $5 ticket option to just watch the show from home.
Right.
It's not the best experience, but it is better than nothing, especially for, you know, the patrons.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people have really come to appreciate virtual concerts and other performance during the pandemic, at least as the best option available and, you know, somewhat more satisfying than nothing. And so, Michael, let me give you the last question here. You are doing music at City Winery. So how are you, what's your calculus that you can do that in your space, either from a business standpoint, paying each member of the band, et cetera, if it's not a solo show,
sure.
As well as that the aerosol carries further, presumably with singing than with speaking?
Well, City Winery, especially our new flagship at 15th Street and Hudson River Park, we're really lucky in that we have very high ceilings and it's a pretty expansive space with a normal legal seated capacity of about 400. So having 100 people or 150 when we go to vaccine only is still a small percentage of the space and not crowded at all. But at 100,
but it is two or three times more than Julie can have at Littlefield.
Yeah, and 100 paid guests does create a little bit of scale, allowing artists to make money. And again, we've always focused on seated concerts, an intimate facility. That's been part of our brand for many years. So we're used to creating a solo, a trio, an acoustic show of a big name artist in a small, intimate space. So this kind of transition has our name all over it. It's part of the reason why even some of the bigger tours that normally would be in a bus and go play in a stadium, which is not happening right now. And as John had said, that won't happen probably for the rest of the year. We're getting the benefit of those shows coming into a smaller space. The artists and the management, the whole music industry is in a recalibration period. And this is in the transition where they're going to make a little bit less money, but they really want to perform for the fans. Fans are willing to pay a little bit more to have the rare magic of a live performance. You know, when I announced from the stage, isn't this great being in a live space again and not being on your computer, watching Zoom or a stream? I get a huge applause. People are so excited to feel the magic and energy of a live performance. And as you started the show, it's almost emotional to be with your fellow fans watching live music again. And so if it can be done safely, there's nothing better.
Thank you both for your work. It is such a complicated transitional moment. You have so much to deal with. I hope our listeners have gotten a sense of that. Michael, we will miss you having City Winery across the street from the WNYC studios since Disney bought that space and you had to move up. But it sounds like your new space, 15th or 16th Street at the Hudson River, is absolutely luscious. So I look forward to seeing you in person again and going there at some point. Michael Dorff, founder and CEO of City Winery, and Julie Kim, co-owner of Littlefield, an art and performance space at 635 Sackett Street in Gowanus, Brooklyn. Thank you both so much for coming on with us and talking through all the complexities. I know our listeners really appreciate it. Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.